When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, as well as insight and analysis into all the topics you're talking about in football. I'm Ian McGarry. With me, of course, as always, is pundit extraordinaire Duncan Castles. And we're delighted to welcome back the maestro of calcio, Aurelio Capaldi. Aurelio, ciao, fratello. Come stai?
Ciao. Hello, everybody.
Great to have you, Aurelio. Thank you for joining us. And, of course, with the maestro of calcio in the house, we will be talking all things Italian football, but specifically the movements of the great Carlo Ancelotti and Max Allegri. First of all, though, we're going to start with a bit of news on Erling Haaland, the RB Salzburg striker who is tearing it up in the Champions League as well as at the Austrian League. We know that Marcel Boot, who is Manchester United's chief scout, or we think he is, Duncan, because obviously that seems to change from day to day, watched him this last week against Liverpool. We can tell you that he then met Erling's father, of course, the former Leeds United and Manchester City player Alf Inge Haaland, to talk about the possibility of a transfer to Old Trafford. Things went well, as much as we have been told, except for one little thing, which is a major thing, and that is his game time, because Erling has grown accustomed at just the tender age of 19, to playing every game, playing almost every 90 minutes as well, and obviously scoring prolifically in every time he takes the field, it seems. Now, Alf, his father, specifically asked Marcel Boot for assurances with regards to what Erling, his son, could expect if he joins Manchester United in terms of game time, in terms of his the pecking order. Anthony Martial obviously plays as the point striker at this moment in time, with Marcus Rashford playing off the left. Erling Haaland is very much a number nine, very much a point striker. And he wanted assurances with regards to, you know, what would happen. Now, obviously, Marcel Boot, as chief scout, is not the person to give those assurances. However, Haaland has played under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Molde as a youth player. And we expect there will be a meeting between those two in the next 2 weeks. However, Duncan, if you are Erling Haaland and you've got that, you know, verve of youth and also the desire to play every 90 minutes, and the fact that he's been used to doing that, both in his domestic league and in the Champions League, how would Solskjaer convince that player that he will be the starting number nine at United?
I think that's a difficult thing for Solskjaer to convince, because he clearly has a lot invested in Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial and the way they're playing at present. So I think any Haaland having that discussion, and Haaland's father having that discussion with Manchester United, is going to rightfully say, well, are you prepared to relegate Martial to second choice striker, or are you thinking of using me off the wing next season instead of Daniel James? And I think Solskjaer's job there will be to persuade Haaland that it's better to move to Manchester United now, with a certain amount of game time guaranteed, but not a promise of being the starting forward, than it is to take an intermediate step. And look, it's not just the father and the player that are involved here. As we told you in the podcast several weeks ago, Mino Raiola is the agent involved, looking for a large commission on the deal, has been pitching the idea that he can raise as much as 100 million euros for the transfer fee, he's not going to get that from the intermediate steps. And Haaland has, and his representative, had conversations with Borussia Dortmund and Red Bull Leipzig in, I think, the past week, and certainly this month. And those are the kind of clubs where he could expect to move to and play straight off and play more game time. And from a career development perspective, you'd think that would be the more sensible move, and that you stay in a German-speaking country in a league that doesn't have quite the step up that he will experience from Austria to the Premier League, although it will be a step up for him. And spend a year, a couple of years in Germany with an agreement in place that you will be sold for a certain transfer fee, put a clause in the contract, you'd be sold for a certain transfer fee, assuming you've achieved certain targets and retained the interest of the bigger clubs in Europe. And the club are ready to sell at that point. That's very much the model that Dortmund, Red Bull Leipzig follow. So it would be the sensible path if you think you're going to develop in that fashion. Some people I've talked to about Haaland, they question whether his valuation is really 100 million. I've talked to a couple of people whose opinion on quality of players I trust a lot, and said to them that's what Raiola's trying to get. And they both come back and said, no, he's not worth that price. Maybe 50, maybe 60 million euros. And I mean, one of them in particular thinks that he might turn out to be something of a flat track bully, a player who looks very good in the Austrian league and looks very good in the Norwegian league because of his physical prowess, but not quite technically good enough to translate that physical prowess into being a top player in the knockout round stages of the Champions League and in a harder division. And there are probably a few signs of that in the match against Liverpool this week. He had opportunities to score in that game, and I saw a couple of heavy touches and a kind of panic over shooting that you don't want to see in a player who you are setting up as being your number nine. And you know, if you're going to spend 100 million euros on a player, you want a guy who can get those decisions right at the right moment when those opportunities present themselves in the very important games. He's still young. He's still just 19. But look, I think Manchester United have an interesting choice to make on this player. How far they're prepared to spend in terms of salary, transfer fee, and whether they really want to go down the line and convince him that Manchester United are the right club to come to, and whether they want to invest that kind of money in ensuring that he comes to Manchester United and paying Mino Raiola what he expects to get from that deal as well.
Well, given they're trying to get out of bed with Mino Raiola right now, Duncan, I would think that getting back into that situation might not be high on the list of priorities for Manchester United. Aurelio, you're very familiar with Raiola and his workings in Serie A. Has there been any interest in Haaland from major clubs in Italy, or has just seemed to pass them by?
Italian clubs are, of course, very impressed. And there were whispers from Juventus and Inter, but now it looks like the player is already very expensive as everybody is chasing him. So the debate here is to find another one, but younger and cheaper, because it's not a great time to join this kind of business for many Italian clubs. But of course, Juventus and Inter Milan are very careful about this.
Unsurprising, I think, with regard to the fee that's being requested and certainly punted by Raiola for Haaland, that clubs would be put off, obviously, by the expectation they should fork out 100 million euros for a 19-year-old who's played his football in the Austrian top division. from that transfer potentially happening in January to what's going on right now in England. And of course, Carlo Ancelotti's availability, having been sacked midweek by Napoli, has brought around interest from both Arsenal and Everton. We reported on this on the podcasts on Tuesday and Wednesday this week. We absolutely need to get the inside view, which will come from Aurelio, because he knows both Carlo Ancelotti and Max Allegri. We'll come to him in a second. But in your opinion, Aurelio, where does Carlo Ancelotti sit now with regards to the interest in him from both those Premier League clubs? Are they both still an option, or is one more of an option than the other, do you think?
Carlo Ancelotti's next destination is Vancouver now.
Well, Vancouver Whitecaps.
Because he has already planned to spend Christmas and New Year's Eve in Vancouver, where his wife is from. And so we spent some time in Canada. But of course, he's very keen to be back in the business, because he was very disappointed the way Napoli treated him, in particularly the way Napoli chairman Aurelio De Laurentiis treated him and his staff. So he's keen to be back, and Premier League is his favorite option. I think both Arsenal and Everton might be interesting for him. And so he's very open to listening potential offers. And this is not the case where he wants to be without working for a couple of months, like it happened in the past. Now he's ready to be back soon. And as soon as he gets an offer that he considers good, he will find an agreement with Napoli, and so they will definitely part ways, because at the moment he's under contract and he's been fired.
What are Ancelotti's other options, Aurelio? Is it the case that he wants the Premier League above all else, and he's prepared to step down the ladder to the extent that he would take a club like Everton, which is, let's face it, that's a big drop off of the kind of elite clubs that he has been used to coaching? And even if Napoli was a step down, I believe that was done for specific reasons in terms of family thoughts that he had, and enabled him to spend some time in Italy. And also he was inheriting a squad with a lot of potential there, who could have a realistic chance of competing for the Italian title and for the Champions League.
He wants to go back and live in London. So the priority is to be back in England, and Premier League is his favorite option. So I think Everton is a real option for him too. But of course, he must be open to offers from somewhere else too. Not Serie A. This was totally unexpected from him, because he was thinking of a first season of transition with Napoli last year. And this time he was ready to win something with Napoli. But things went from bad to worse, and in Champions League things were going well, but in Serie A the gap was too big, and also there were problems between the club and the players, and he couldn't handle the situation, because it's very difficult to handle the moody chairman of Napoli. So it was difficult for him to cope with this situation, and in the end there was a lot of confusion, and it ended in a bad way for him. But as I said before, he's really keen to be back soon, and Premier League is his favourite option.
Aurelio, you know Ancelotti very well, you've worked with him for a long time. There's a degree of scepticism from some Arsenal supporters about Ancelotti, that he's not the same level of coach as he once was. after his time at Bayern Munich and Napoli. What's your view on his motivation and his degree of skill as a manager in the current game?
I think that there were also some particular views about him even when he took over at Real Madrid. I remember that people were saying that he was not making the most of his players, that the training sessions were soft and this kind of stuff. But in the end, he was capable of winning important things in Madrid. In Germany, the situation was different. And at Napoli, things went in a way that he couldn't imagine. I think that his level of motivation is very high. Of course, even for a manager, there are brilliant times and also bad times. But I don't think that suddenly Carlo Ancelotti is not capable of coaching a top team just because things didn't go well at Napoli or at Bayern. So I think that he's really ready to be back and he's not that old. And I think he can still do very well.
Aurelio, Carlo's at his reputation, you know, I've worked with Carlo. I've kept in touch with him over the years since he left Chelsea. Players love him. He's a very easy guy to go on with. He's a very good man manager. He's not so noted for possibly his coaching on the practice pitch, nor for being very disciplined or disciplinarian, I should say, in terms of, you know, taking a squad and you know, being hard on them and making them into some kind of unit that, you know, he can mould in his shape. Everton at the moment seem to be the favourites to sign Ancelotti. From the outside, it looks like that group of players needs more of a disciplined approach, because they've got a lot of talent. They've spent a lot of money on players who have underperformed. I'm just wondering, do you think that Carlo's approach can succeed at Everton and get results from what is a very underperforming group of players?
I think that he could do well there because he's a guy that is able to give confidence to players. And he can take the best from them when they lack motivation. The problem at Napoli was the confusion between the chairman and the team, because when the chairman says without talking to the manager that the players must go to the hotel for before the game for 2 or 3 days, and this has not been agreed, then there is confusion, and then it's difficult also for Carlo. But if the relationship with the club is good, and it's also a matter between the players and the manager, then that's the situation when Carlo is good at.
Carlo's exit from Napoli, does that change the circumstances for Kalidou Koulibaly at all? The player that a lot of Premier League clubs have shown a lot of interest in, and there's been significant attempts to try and bring him to the Premier League before. Do you think this opens the door for a sale or not, or no difference to their stance on retaining the player?
I think that also Koulibaly's relationship with Napoli is changing. I mean, till last year, he was 100% convinced to stay at Napoli, even if bigger clubs were chasing him. Now I think he's ready to leave, because this has been a really difficult season, and it's only December, so still a couple of months to go. But I think he's considering to go, and also Napoli chairman is probably more keen to sell him, because he had promised Ancelotti to keep him, when they decided that they would go for the title, they would try to win the Italian title. Now, the project in Napoli seems to be different. And so I think Sale is an option for Koulibaly. But also, facts have confirmed that Koulibaly is a fantastic player, is a great central defender, but you must be careful who is playing alongside him. Because I'll give you an example. When he was playing with Albiol, things were brilliant because Albiol has the kind of technical characteristics and skills to play alongside him. Things were not so good when he played alongside Manolas, because Manolas is more similar to him.
From Koulibaly to the enigma, I think we can call him at the moment, Aurelio, Max Allegri, who left Juventus, as we know, and was replaced by Maurizio Sarri last summer. We have reported on the transfer window previously that Allegri has spent time in London. He's accelerated his lessons in English. We understand, also has turned down an approach from Arsenal to interview for the job there. We also know that his representatives were contacted by Everton in advance of their managerial position becoming vacant after Marco Silva's sacking. He seems to be a man who's got a plan in his mind, Aurelio, with regards to where his next job is. Can you shed any light on it for us, where you think Allegri believes or indeed knows where he's going to end up?
His plan from the start was to spend a year off when he parted ways with Juventus. He decided that he would take a sabbatical. And so I was not surprised when I heard that he had turned down some offers, and also Arsenal. But he studied English, as you said, and he wanted to go to London quite often. And he wanted to try to learn a specific football language, because Premier League is his favorite option. And he wants to go to England. In Italy, at the moment, there are no jobs for Max Allegri, because he has just left Juventus. Conte took over at Inter, and the other clubs cannot afford to hire him. So England is the biggest opportunity for him, or Spain if something extraordinary happens at Real Madrid, because do not forget that Florentino Perez already tried to hire him once, and it was not the right moment for Allegri, so he turned it down. At the moment, in England, I think that Max Allegri is interested in the possibility of taking over at Manchester United. But Allegri is not interested to go to England just to be in the Premier League. He wants to join a winning project. He's an ambitious guy, and he wants to compete for the title and also for important things. So I think he wants to have the situation clear in the next 2-3 months. He doesn't want to arrive in June without knowing his destiny. So I think that the next weeks will be very important for him, and I believe that Manchester United is an option.
Has he received encouragement or at least communication from Manchester United regarding the possibility? Because when Solskjaer faced those two crucial games in the last week or so, Aurelio, beating Tottenham Hotspur and then Manchester City in succession, it looked like if it had gone the other way, then Solskjaer's job would certainly have been on the line. It seems now things have calmed, although Duncan and I are in agreement that two wins over even those big clubs doesn't make him safe. Do you believe that Allegri is still anticipating Solskjaer will leave, and therefore his opportunity to become manager at Old Trafford is a realistic one?
I think that we all know in football things change week after week. So football is a moody world. But Allegri got some encouragement, as you said. And so he's very curious to know if Manchester United can become something concrete.
Why is Manchester United attractive to him, Aurelio? Because we're looking at a club that, if you look at their performances in the league since Sir Alex Ferguson and David Gill left, they've only finished second once in those seasons and are only making the Champions League on average one season out of two during that period. Yet we're talking about Allegri, who wants to win the Champions League and wants to win titles. It doesn't seem like that an obvious fit in many ways.
You're right, but I think that he's trying to understand if Manchester United are ready to open a new cycle, a new winning period, if they can become more ambitious and try to win more things, because I think that he's also trying to be realistic, and he knows that at the moment Liverpool have just renewed with Klopp, Manchester City have Guardiola, and the big jobs, which big jobs are available? Not so many. So Manchester United is interesting to him because he knows that potentially they can try to be winners again.
And Bayern Munich, I believe there's been some discussion that he could be a potential coach next season.
Yes, you're right. Max Allegri is very close to FIFA agent Branchini, and Branchini is very close to Rummenigge, and they talked about the possibility. Of course, as you know, coaching Bayern means also that you have to be fluent with German, and that is not the case with Allegri, and so he should start to study it and try to be very quick. I'm not saying it's impossible, but at the moment I don't see it as the first option.
I'm intrigued, Aurelio, when you said at the beginning of this conversation that Allegri wanted to learn specifically English football language. Now, is that the case then that he has been learning like phrases like man on and can we not knock it and hoof? Because I'm not sure what the Italian is for those phrases, in all honesty. They don't exist in calcio.
He's trying to explore more vocabulary, more specific vocabulary, trying to read newspapers and sports pages, and he wants to be fluent if the big chance comes up. So I think it's more than understandable that he wants to be ready if he's got the opportunity.
Wednesday's podcast, Aurelio, I mischievously suggested that perhaps Allegri would be a candidate for Manchester City next summer, because Guardiola, as Duncan and I have discussed many times in the last few weeks, appears to be entering into the end game scenario of his time at the Etihad Stadium. Now, this brings us on to another interesting aspect, which, of course, you can enlighten us on, and that is Maurizio Sarri's situation at Juventus, because, as we also know, Guardiola has an open invitation from the Agnelli family to become head coach at Juve. Let's just say, you know, the hypothetical would be Guardiola does leave City And would that mean bad news for Sarri?
Well, I think that if Guardiola actually leaves Manchester City, Juventus want to be the first club to talk to him, because they already made him know that when he leaves Manchester, they want to be their next employer. So Guardiola knows perfectly that Juventus are top of the potential buyers, and they always liked him. They were really interested in understanding if he was going to leave Manchester City last season. There was a lot of fuss, but then they went for Sarri because they knew Guardiola decided to stay at the Etihad Stadium. But I think also that if Guardiola becomes available, they would have no doubts. Of course, results matter. Of course, it depends what happens with Sarri. But if they understand, if they realize that Guardiola is available, Juventus would go straight for him because they absolutely like him. And I think that Guardiola never denied that when he is experience in Premier League ends, he wants to try also an Italian experience. And if he comes to Italy, Juventus are the number one destination for him, I think.
Maurizio Sarri, Aurelio, you were quite sceptical about whether he would be a good fit for Juventus when we spoke to you in the summer. What is your feeling now he's had several months in the job and a mixed set of results in those initial months in the job?
Till now, things didn't go badly for him, but nobody saw the amazing game that some people would expect to see. Probably in its time, yes, but at the moment, nobody really saw an amazing Juventus side. When Juventus decided to part ways with Allegri, they said they were looking for someone who could offer a charming game, someone who could be very entertaining. And Maurizio Sarri was hired because it was impossible at the time to sign Guardiola. So Guardiola, again, was number one option for Juventus. Then they went for Sarri. They were hoping that Sarri could offer a fantastic play, a fantastic game. But till now, on a very few occasions, Juventus could offer an amazing style of play. So it remains to be seen if Sarri can express his ideas fully with Juventus. At the moment, Inter are top of the league, only 2 points. But let's face facts, it's still early to say if it was a good appointment or a bad one. It's still early.
Is he playing Sarri ball? Duncan actually called it something different, didn't you, Duncan?
I've forgotten what I called it. Misery ball, I think it was.
No, Sarri bollocks.
Sarri bollocks, yes, Sarri bollocks.
Is that the case at Juventus, Aurelio? Is he playing Sarri bollocks?
At the moment, Sarri is winning most of the games thanks to the individual players. For example, Paulo Dybala is playing very well. Paulo Dybala is making a difference in most of the games. In Moscow, he won thanks to Douglas Costa. Against Atletico or against AC Milan, it was Dybala again. Against Lokomotiv, he was losing and Dybala scored twice. So individual players, and Juventus have lots of quality in the team. Individual players are helping him, and at the moment things still have to prove brilliant for him. So as I said, the style of play is not something which was expected at this level. Now people were expecting more from him, but maybe in the next months he will be able to express a better style of play.
Aurelio, a more general question about Italian coaches, because you've told us that Ancelotti wants to come back and Allegri's preference is to go to the Premier League. In total, only 9 men have won a Premier League title as coaches. No Englishman yet, but 4 separate Italians have won the Premier League title, and 4 inside the last 10 years. Why do you think it is that Italian coaches have had such success in English football?
I think because they are very curious and very well prepared, and they are very attracted by the Premier League. So the motivation and their ideas, all these ingredients, helped them to get good results.
And technical quality or handling of players, you think they're better coaches in general than most other nationalities because of their upbringing in Serie A?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they are not better just because they are Italian or because they come from Serie A. No, I don't think so. I think that, of course, players matter a lot. Technical quality matter a lot. For example, if you talk to Allegri, he's the kind of guy who always points out that technical quality and good players are very, very important to succeed and to have success. Of course, I think that success is a combination of many ingredients. And one factor is that the Italian coaches that you mentioned are very well prepared and very well motivated. But of course, without a big club and without high quality players, you don't win.
Well, this week has seen the conclusion of UEFA's 2 competitions, i.e. the Champions League and Europa League, in terms of the group stages, gentlemen. And for the first time in Champions League history, all 16 of the teams in the knockout stage come from the 5 top leagues. This has led to, or certainly not led to, but it's obviously intensified the debate about the future of the Champions League, with the European Club Association calling for a revamped version driven by the president of Juventus, Signor Agnelli, as well as FIFA putting out to tender the possibility of an annual competition for the World Club Championship to private equity firms. Duncan, we've spoken about this quite a lot on the pod. Where is there going to be a compromise, in your opinion? Or, indeed, is this going to become a conflict?
I think it already is a conflict, and it's a multidimensional conflict that we haven't seen before in football, because we've had this constant pressure from the top end of the European game, from the richest clubs, to have closer to guaranteed access to the Champions League. And that's one of the reasons why we've ended up with a situation where all 16 teams that we're going to watch in the knockout stages of the Champions League, which is the best club football, it's the highest quality football, it's the knockout element of it, produces amazing drama, and it sells very well because of it. For the first time, they're all coming from those top 5 leagues, and that's partly because the slots in the group stages are predominantly given to those top five leagues now. It's actually very difficult to get into even the group stages if you come from a minor league. You look at Ajax, who were seconds away from reaching the final of the Champions League last season, and I think would have been more interesting opponents to Liverpool than Tottenham proved to be. And they had to go through multiple rounds of pre-qualification just to get back into the competition this year. And then their argument will be that they should have got through to the group stages if a VAR and refereeing decisions hadn't gone spectacularly against them. Against Chelsea in a match that they looked to have won and eventually seemed to be the difference between them making the knockout stages or not. But instead of just having the top clubs like Juventus, which is Agnelli's club, saying we want more of the money and we want more secure places in the Champions League competition, and now you have this push for guaranteed places and more games, more guaranteed games, and they've had a couple of goes at proposing differences that have so far been rejected. You also have FIFA coming into the equation and saying we want a piece of top level club football. They've already expanded the Club World Cup. So in 2021, we're going to get a Club World Cup, which in China with 24 competing teams. Eight of those will be from Europe, six from South America. But as you say, FIFA put this tender process document out to various groups who could provide funding for that club competition and said, we're not just looking for funding for a quadrennial 24-team Club World Cup. We're open to a change in the number of teams participating in it. We're open to the scheduling of it, so it could potentially be an annual event. We're open to changes of format. And it's this coming very soon after the president of FIFA, Gianni Infantino, has met with the president of Real Madrid, Florentino Perez, who has pushed in the past for some alternative to the Club World Cup, which would guarantee Real Madrid access and much greater revenue. So you have UEFA trying to fight their own clubs to hold on to that tournament. And then FIFA in the background saying, well, we're prepared to set up something completely new, which will put more money in your hands. And obviously FIFA are targeting the very top clubs with this. So it's we haven't seen this in football, and I think it's a very dangerous situation, and it's hard to see any outcome in which more of the game's revenue ends up going to the top clubs, the richest clubs at present, and their dominance of the game is cemented.
Really, why has Agnelli been particularly belligerent about this? Because he's been leading the charge, if you like, with regards to change. There's a vested interest for him, obviously, and Juventus have failed to win the Champions League now for many years, having dominated in the 1990s and indeed some of the 2000s as well. Is that a personal thing for him, or is it something which is supported by the rest of Italian football?
No, it's not supported by the rest of Italian football, but Agnelli is doing this because he believes that Juventus deserve that kind of treatment. And also, he's a man who doesn't like to be just an observer. He wants to make decisions, and he wants Juventus to have a central role. Juventus and the big clubs like Juventus in Europe to have a central role, like Duncan explained. He's very convinced that they can get a better result and that they will progress. But the debate is there, and I think that it's really unpredictable, the future right now.
How does the rest of Serie A feel about the idea that Juventus might break away and join a European Super League, which is one of the proposals that has been discussed by these top clubs, that they leave domestic and UEFA competition altogether and set up a new league with a new governing body potentially FIFA and different investors paying for the broadcasting rights?
Most of clubs, most of Italian clubs are not talking about this, but off the record, they're not very happy with the idea because, of course, that the advantage would be for Juventus, but many of them don't see it as a good thing for Italian football and for the other clubs too.
And Agnelli himself, you know him better, obviously, than either of us do. You've seen how he's shaped Juventus into a club that are now dominant in Italian football and have got quite close to winning the Champions League. Do you trust someone like Agnelli to put the best interests of football ahead of the best interests of Juventus? Because his argument is that creating a different structure to the European Champions League will be for the benefit of everyone down the line, because it will allow football to become more popular and generate more revenue.
Well, he's a very ambitious guy. He likes to bring young ideas and fresh ideas in football. At the start, he trusted a man like Marotta, who helped him and the club win a lot. Then there was a time last season when he decided that he would get rid of Marotta, and Marotta went to Inter, and he was not expecting this. So he's a man who is ready to make difficult decisions, also suddenly. Of course, fears are that he's so brilliant to do Juventus interests that other clubs' interests might be damaged or not so well treated.
Is it not the case that he's also made big decisions in his personal life in the past, which tells us a little bit about his character?
Yes, he's a young man who's got a lot of power, and he's a man who likes to be very close to his club. For example, it is normal to see him attending a press conference, not only games, but also press conferences the day before the games. He's very present with Nedved, and also the sporting director Paratici. So he knows that there are occasions when you have to be quick and you have to make big decisions in a short time.
I'm going to have to ask both of you now to give me your call on what some people have called a conspiracy theory. I'm not sure why it's called a conspiracy theory, because it is a fact that today at 10:30 a.m. this morning, Rangers Football Club in Glasgow announced that Steven Gerrard had extended his contract until 2024. 1 hour later, Jurgen Klopp confirmed he'd extended his contract at Anfield until 2024. Is this just a coincidence, Duncan, or are we seeing the succession, in fact, not just the succession, but the coronation of King Steven Gerrard back to Liverpool in 4.5 years' time?
Well, we told you before Steven Gerrard ever took the Rangers job that he saw it as a training ground, as a way to make it easier for him and prepare himself to become Liverpool manager. And he took that high risk decision to go to Rangers because he felt he could learn far more in terms of managing under pressure, under the spotlight, having the pressure to try and beat better resourced rivals at Rangers than he could by going to a Championship club or going to a Premier League club. And it does seem to be working for him. His status has increased. He's still perceived as being a strong contender to be the next Liverpool manager. In terms of coordinating them so a handover can take place in 2024. I think that's something of a stretch, given that it does seem from what Jurgen Klopp has said in his press conference today about why he agreed this new contract, that one of the reasons he agreed it, and it's been announced now, was they were having conversations with players that they wanted to sign and wanted to bring to the club to further improve what the squad, Fenway Sports Group and Klopp have built there and have turned into Premier League champions elect. And those people in those conversations were asking, but what about the manager? How long does he stay for? If I move here, how long will I be playing for Jurgen Klopp? And they feel that they've taken that out of the equation by giving him that long-term contract. It is easy in football to give people long-term contracts, that particularly managers that are never, ever seen out. So if you want to be cynical about it, you could say that there is absolutely no guarantee that Klopp will last to 2024. He has talked in the past about his time at Liverpool having a shelf life. He has talked today about if he stays until 2024, that'll be 9 years, the longest he's ever stayed at one club. He is a man who's been very loyal to his previous club, so I'm not saying that he is preparing to walk away and that he doesn't have any intention of staying to 2024, but I would say there's absolutely no guarantee that he'll last that long. And there is an intensity to managing at the top level of the Premier League, which is, it makes it very difficult now that Arsene Wenger and Sir Alex Ferguson have gone to last that distance. And obviously Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp are on the crest of a wave, and a well-deserved wave at present. And I think Fenway Sports Group have been clever here in getting their man to sign a new contract when the feel-good factor for him personally will be huge. And that also is a tactic that clubs often use with valuable managers. And we've seen it very recently with Brendan Rodgers at Leicester City, in that Rodgers, I think, was happy to allow Arsenal's interest in him to be the cause of a contract extension inside a year of joining the club. But also Leicester made him an offer which will increase his financial value to them if he leaves the club, at a time when he would be very prone to sign it because everything is going so well for him. So I think I'd set the conspiracy theory on Liverpool setting up the coronation for Steven Gerrard in 2024 aside at this point. And I would question whether he would survive at Rangers until 2024 as well, regardless of how well he's done so far.
So conspiracy theory or not, it would be a very easy transition, I think, from Liverpool Football Club when the already legend that is Jurgen Klopp leaves to replace him with the living legend that is Steven Gerrard. One player who has came to light with regards to joining the Anfield Club is the Japanese international at, of course, Haaland's club as well, the Minamino. And he seems to have gone under the radar, Duncan, with regards to attracting interest, especially as he has a release clause of 8.5 million euros, as well as a very small salary as well. Looked very, very good against Liverpool this week, but has been very impressive from people I've spoken to, and I'm sure you have too, for at least 18 months now with RB Salzburg.
Yeah, this is Takumi Minamino. He'll be 25 in January, so they're picking him up at a very good point in his career. He's already done this is his sixth season in European football, so he's experienced and gone through the adaptation process, which is often pretty difficult for Japanese players. I started my journalist career in Japan and watched a lot of the top internationals from Japan move to Europe and really struggle with their initial moves, and not many of them succeeding. Probably the most notable was success was Hidetoshi Nakata, who of course was a great player in Serie A for a number of years. But Minamino's numbers are really good, 63 goals in 192 games in Europe. His output numbers on the pitch are exceptionally good as well. We know that Liverpool use that kind of statistical analysis to filter down to the kind of players they want to focus on. And they seem to have been very clever here. Salzburg have gone on record as saying that they expect the player to leave in January. Liverpool briefing that they've got the deal in place. And it's, in many ways, he's exactly the kind of player that Liverpool have been looking for to give themselves a bit of insurance policy around their attackers, in that he can play anywhere in the second line of attack. So you could see him working as right winger or left winger when Salah or Mane are either injured or have to be shifted elsewhere, which doesn't happen very often. You could see him playing behind the forwards. I wonder if they're even thinking of him as a alternative to Roberto Firmino in that kind of role, sort of false number nine role that Firmino does so well for Liverpool. So they're getting someone at a peak age for a very cheap price, who will fit into their system, should fit into their system well. And there shouldn't be, okay, he's going from Austrian League to Premier League, which is a jump, but they shouldn't have the problems of moving to European football that a lot of Asian and particularly Japanese players have had. So this is, I think, very positive and intelligent bit of transfer work by Liverpool again.
Aurelio, you've seen the player play. Do you think he's a good fit for Liverpool, as Duncan has said?
Yes, I agree with him. I think it's a very intelligent thing to do because his flexibility offers some good options to Liverpool. And also, Jurgen Klopp is a manager who makes his players feel very comfortable. So I think that he will fit the system.
My only worry about Minamino is the fact that Jadon Sakiri, of course, the X-Factor players we like to call him after Ed Woodward's particular description of the players that he needs at Manchester United, is that he's got the same technical skills. He's not as quick. He's quicker than Sakiri, but Sakiri has suffered in terms of game time. But I agree with Duncan with regards to being able to fit into the attacking trident when one of the players either needs a rest or suspended or injured, etc. There's no reason why a player of that technical ability and speed and intelligence wouldn't do well in the Premier League. And as I said, it's remarkable that he has been off the radar in this country in terms of being a target for top clubs when he's been performing so well, as Duncan has explained in his stats. We were very pleased that you've joined us for this Friday's Transfer Window podcast. We will end, as we always do, at the conclusion of the week with the legendary quickfire round. Legendary, of course, as you know, because it really is quick. This week, we are going to ask both Duncan and Aurelio to name their winners in the top five leagues. We said earlier that the last 16 of the Champions League for the first time is comprised entirely of clubs who come from the top five leagues. That is France, Spain, Italy, England and Germany. So I'm going to ask Duncan first because he really wants me to stitch Duncan up on this one. who he thinks the winners of the Premier League, Serie A, the Bundesliga, La Liga and Ligue 1 will be. I suspect we've got only two of the five which are of any debate, but let's just wait and see. Maybe there'll be a curveball in there. Duncan, tell us what you think.
Okay, so Premier League has to be Liverpool.
Unless we see
a collapse of biblical proportions, I think it's Liverpool's. France, Paris Saint-Germain, very obvious. Italy. I'm going to defer to whatever Aurelio tells me is going to happen, but I'm going to have a bet on Antonio Conte and Internazionale because of the Sarri bollocks we discussed earlier and his ability to cause problems when problems shouldn't be there. And then Germany, Bayern have got a long way to come back this season. They're 7 points behind at present. They managed it last year, but let's go for one of those European clubs that have been exceptionally good in recruitment. We've been talking about RB Salzburg. Let's take their sister club in Germany and go for RB Leipzig as German champions this season.
And La Liga?
La Liga, Barcelona.
He was trying to skip this, huh?
Yeah, it's true.
Aurelio, you know, sometimes in the tunnel of the of any stadium, there's a room on the left. It's called the suture room, and that's an American term for having stitches. I think you've just entered the suture room.
Okay, let's start with the Premier League, Liverpool. Then let's go to French League, Paris Saint-Germain. Bundesliga, I still believe Bayern can do it. So as Duncan said, it's not easy because they're late, but still a lot of time to go. And I can see Bayern winning again. In Spain, I think that Real Madrid can do it. Real Madrid can do it. And in Italy, I think Inter Milan are ready now.
Ooh, big predictions there, guys. I look forward to reviewing them in May, when we will have the Maestro of Calcio back on to discuss exactly who won what and where. I'm going to be very, very controversial and say Borussia Mönchengladbach in Bundesliga, because I just like the fact that they haven't won it for I don't know how many years. So that's my random choice in the Bundesliga. I kind of agree with you and all the others, so that's fair enough. I want to thank Aurelio Capaldi for giving us his time on Friday's Transfer Window podcast and his insight, analysis and intelligence, as well, of course, his amazing company, which we always enjoy. Duncan Castle.
Thank you.
Grazie, fratello.
Grazie.
and thank you very much, of course, Duncan Castle as well. It's been an eventful week here on the Transfer Window. If you want to continue the debate after the podcast finishes, and indeed until Monday's next edition, then please contact us and through the usual channels on social media at Transfer Podcast on Twitter, at Duncan Castles, at Garbo SJ on Twitter, and indeed at Aurelio Capaldi on Twitter, as well as Instagram and Facebook. We are at Transfer Podcast. We understand some of you had some problems getting the podcast from iTunes this week. We believe that has not been rectified. So when you do so, if you want to get the podcast from iTunes, then please also give us a 5-star review. That, as you know, increases the community. And of course, we all get to increase the debate as well. Thank you for listening, and we will be back with you on Monday.